Welcome to today's podcast, another installment in our series of strategic planning topics for business owners. My name is Steve Young, and I work for UBS. I run a specialized team out of Indianapolis where we focus on the unique and specialized needs of wealth management needs for owners of closely held businesses. We pride ourselves on helping our clients evaluate options, take a look at strategic objectives, and help them figure out the best way to monetize their company when it comes time for retirement. Today, I am joined by John Levin of Lincoln International. He's going to join us for this podcast on emerging trends in the middle market space. John is the vice president of Lincoln International, focusing on business development for the Midwest. Lincoln, as you may or may not know, is one of our few select partners in our boutique investment banking network. And over the last couple of years, my team here in Indianapolis has had the pleasure of getting to know John and his team as we look at opportunities for helping our clients transition out of the ownership of their companies most of the time as part of their retirement program. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here.
Great. Thanks for joining us today. Before we get started on the major topic of discussion, why don't you take a second or two and tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how Lincoln International has become a partner with UBS in this space?
Sure. No, I'm happy to. So I've been with Lincoln International for about 7 years. I joined out of business school at the University of Chicago. And prior to that, I actually had a brief stint in wealth management. And then prior to that, I worked on Capitol Hill out of my undergrad in political science at Creighton. So I've been around a little bit, but, you know, landed with Lincoln, and I've really enjoyed, you know, the time that I've had here. We've, you know, since I walked in the door, it's just been a tremendous bull market in M&A. And several years ago, our firm established, or formalized, I should say, a relationship with UBS, which I think is, you know, great for Lincoln, great for UBS, and more importantly, great for our mutual clients, because clients who choose to work with UBS on the wealth management side, they do so for, you know, a very specific reason. UBS is a large global bank with tremendous resources. And as a client of UBS, you have access to those resources. The only downside of that is the size of UBS prohibits them from transacting from an M&A perspective on a lot of smaller deals. And, you know, there's smaller deals to these bulge bracket banks like UBS, but $100 million, $200 million business that gets sold, you and I both know is nothing to sneeze at. And so UBS was very proactive in saying, we need to be able to offer clients of the firm quality investment banking resources, even if it's a little bit below our minimum where we can transact. And so we formalized the deal with UBS, where if a client comes to, you know, your team, Steve, and says, I've got a business that I perhaps want to sell, and it's a, you know, $100 million business, let's say, well, UBS is probably not going to transact in that space, but you have the ability to introduce them to Lincoln or other firms that are well suited to run a sale process for that company. And so, like I said, it's been a few, probably 5 years since we formalized our relationship with UBS, and I think it's been great for everyone.
I would certainly agree, and that's a great fit because, as we see here in the Midwest primarily, most of the transactions we look at are in that $10 million to, I'd say, $75 million-ish is kind of the bulk of the opportunities we see. Not to say that we don't see things smaller than that or larger than that, but I would say the majority of the transactions we're talking to clients about are in that range. Would you say that's your sweet spot as well?
I would say that kind of the upper ranges of that are our sweet spot. But I will say, you know, to UBS's credit, what they did was they built a referral network that kind of runs the gamut. So you have smaller, very good investment banks in a UBS network that will transact at $10 million to $50 million, $75 million. Transaction size. And then you've also got firms like Lincoln International at the higher range who are prepared to take on the $100 million all the way up to $400 or $500 million, where UBS would start to get interested at the investment banking level. So you've created options for your clients. And I think that that's important.
I appreciate that. You know, so one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on the podcast today is you had written a piece a while back entitled Why Hire an Investment Banker. And I continually go back and read that every so often because it's just got a lot of great information in there. One of the things that really struck me is you break out four components of support, well, basically supporting your thesis that it is important to hire an investment banker in the process. Can you elaborate on those four major components for our listeners?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I would say that, you know, the first one is, you know, having a banker that, you know and trust to navigate the complexity of a deal. Selling a company is very complex. It can be long. It can be arduous. I would say in a smooth process, that is that the client is ready to go, the reporting's in order, all of that, probably going to take 6 months. Selling a private business, which is where I specialize, it is family founder-owned businesses, you know, that's typically going to take, you know, maybe closer to 7 to 9 months. And so, you know, having someone who can navigate the complexity, who has a really current and intimate knowledge of the M&A market, of the auction process, of trends, of negotiating with buyers, and also knowing the buyers in the space, I think is really important. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to drive value and terms. So anytime you're going to sell a company or even, you know, raise capital in a process, you want to be able to create competitive tension among the global buyer and investor universe. So Lincoln, for example, we wanted to be able to drive where it fits global auction processes. And that's why over the years, since our founding in 1996, we've expanded to 22 offices around the world. We have 5 in the United States, you know, 1 in South America, and the balance in throughout Asia, Europe, Russia. And that is so that we can access buyers, the best buyer, wherever they might be in the world. But you want to be able to create that competitive tension to drive the value and the terms on behalf of the seller, our client. Another one that I think is really, really important is allow management and ownership to focus on the performance of the business. When you're selling your company, then it is very, very important that if you lay out a budget for the remainder of the year, you know, your forecast, and you are hitting those numbers every month. Because if you get into discussions with buyers and all of a sudden you are a little bit too ambitious with your forecast for the year and you're falling short of those numbers on a monthly basis, there's, you know, it's kind of blood in the water, for lack of a better term, and it allows the buyer to gain leverage over the business owner or the seller. So we're able to come in and manage the process. So the request that we're getting from the buyer, we cannot trouble the owner or the management team with these requests. We're prepared to act as a filter and also provide information to them without disturbing you, because we're going to be doing a big download at the very beginning and we should be able to fulfill most requests. But just having someone to act as a barrier between the buyer universe and the ownership and management team is hugely important. And the final thing I would say is to create alternatives. You know, selling a family founder-owned business, it's a business decision, but it's also a very personal process. And we want to make sure that, you know, we're creating alternatives with the seller's considerations in mind. You know, sometimes the legacy of the business is a concern. Sometimes, you know, they want to go smaller, not as broad process for confidentiality at the beginning. There's just a lot of things to consider as we build out how we're going to approach buyers. And then, well, who's included in the buyer universe? Is it going to be strategic only? Is it going to include private equity buyers? Do we think that based on what the ownership wants, then maybe approaching family offices at the beginning is going to be the right call? So just having someone with those connections who's going to take all that into account and is going to use all that information to create strong alternatives for the seller is very important as well.
That's a really great outline of those four components there. And it's really important, I think, to work with a firm that can focus in on the key elements of each one of those categories, because they are so vitally important for an owner of a business, or owners of a business for that matter, as they consider selling their company. One of the things that we are really proud of at UBS is having the ability to run down some dual paths at the same time. And what I mean by that is helping the owner from a personal standpoint evaluate what's important to them in the transaction, how to actually structure the deal on the personal side to maximize the value or the perceived value of that actual transaction, while we are still working with firms like yourself to run down the path of trying to find the best way to position the company for the highest and best opportunity for a buyer, to bring in buyers, to create that competitive tension you referred to a few minutes ago, to make sure that the seller gets the absolute best deal on the table. Given that you were, yes, you were in the wealth management business before, you had some experience in my shoes, talk a little bit about how you see that partnership, the vital importance of having that partnership as somebody is going through this process.
Yeah, that's a good question. So my firm, we're big advocates of getting really high quality wealth management teams involved as early in the process as possible. You know, for one, it just makes sense from the client standpoint if, you know, at the beginning kind of this whole timeline, it's really just a big download from the ownership and management, where we'll go and we'll sit with them for an entire day with a big list of things that we need, information that we request, so that we can start writing, you know, kind of what's known as the book that we're going to send out to potential buyers. That process can take a little bit of time, anywhere between a month and 2 months or 3 months, you know, depending on, you know, the industry. And so in that time is when we really like to say, sit down and talk with your wealth planner, because, you know, there are some things that they can help you get in order so that when it comes time to start going into like exclusivity with a buyer, you're going to be best positioned to maximize your after-tax proceeds, or, you know, shield some assets from taxation upon close. So we're big advocates of that for that reason. And also because we'll talk to our bankers who are leading these deals, and we'll say getting good wealth management representation involved early is going to help the client understand some things that may happen during the process. So just throwing out, you know, a scenario using generic numbers, let's just say we're selling a business and the offer on the table, the preliminary offer is $100 million. And after the buyer does a little bit of diligence, then they say, you know what, actually we found something that concerns us a little bit. Our offer is revised, it's $95 million. Well, to a business owner who built that business, that $5 million discount can be a pretty significant slap in the face. So I think it, you know, they can react harshly to that, I think, as is understandable. But if they've gone through a comprehensive planning process with a good wealth management team, then what they can see is what that $5 million means over the course of the rest of their lives. Because if they have a plan in place where you're taking proceeds, you're investing them, you're providing them an income stream, you're accounting for what they want to leave to the next generation, then, you know, what you can see is that, you know, that discount may not be as big a deal as they thought. And, you know, while we on the investment banking team are still going to fight for the highest price, and we're still going to try to use those competitive tension between potential buyers to get that price as high as possible, if it ends up being a little bit less than what was in the initial offer, being able to work with a team like yours, I think, Steve, gives them more confidence that they're still going to be able to accomplish all of their goals post-transaction.
That is definitely a key objective of the financial planning we take owners through during this process. One of the things we really focus in on is creating different scenarios to see which different options of different outcomes, how they may affect their long-term goals and objectives. And we're constantly talking to our clients about three primary objectives, the first being liquidity. As you know, once they sell that company, hand the keys over to the other side of the desk, they'll get a large amount of money. And the question is now, how do we best position that money so that we can maintain our lifestyle and hopefully not outlive our money? And also, how can we transfer that those assets when we're gone to the next generation or the generation after them with the minimum amount of taxes and other considerations as well? And then lastly, are there other causes that we're really excited about, making sure when we're gone that we can actually improve the lives of others? So we take a look at all that. We look at liquidity differently than we look at longevity, you know, from the time they transact the company until they pass on, and then legacy. And each one of those strategies has a unique, special structure to it, how we position the liquidity in those particular strategies. But the key thing is to be able to look at how those three different strategies from a wealth management perspective interact with different scenarios for transacting the sale of that company. Highest, best, and most probable case versus worst case scenario, they're all going to have a different impact on the client. So we want to make sure they can see the end result before it happens and feel comfortable that this transaction will work at different levels, and also to remove a lot of the emotional concerns about going through this process because they know where everything's going to go once the cash is wired to their account, how it's going to be allocated, and it's going how it's all going to work together. So, John, a couple other things real quick as we start to wrap up here. One of the things that I would like our listeners to hear from you is some key considerations when selecting an investment banker to work with.
Well, I think that, you know, especially in a family founder-owned business universe, you need to, you know, hire someone that, you know, number one, you can trust, and number two, that, you know, you don't mind spending long stretches of time with, or, you know, hopping on the phone or a Zoom call, you know, multiple times a week. But, you know, also you want to make sure that they have the experience in your industry or in your sector. So we break out all of our bankers into very specific industry and subsectors of those industries, and they transact only within those verticals. And so they are experts in whether it's like consumer, okay, below consumer, you've got restaurants, or you've got food service, or you've got, you know, brick and mortar retail, or you've got e-commerce. And so you want to make sure that they know your space very, very well. You want to make sure you ask to see their credentials, because if they're transacting in the space, they're going to have an accurate, you know, kind of up-to-date pulse on the market. They know where valuations are. They know where terms are. You know, they know what buyer behavior is. You want to make sure that, you know, they're dealing with enough potential buyers that, you know, they kind of know who they're dealing with. So, for example, we talked a couple of times about competitive tension, creating that competitive tension. And right now, private equity groups are very competitive in a lot of processes. They have a lot of capital to deploy. Maybe a private equity buyer is going to be the best buyer. Maybe they're not. But at the very least, they can help create that competitive tension in a process. And there are a lot of very strong, good private equity firms out there. There are also some that might be looking to sneak a fast one by a little bit, where they're going to throw some offer out there to get you interested, to get you committed. And, you know, they're planning on shifting the goalposts a little bit down the line. We have a financial sponsor coverage group that covers hundreds of middle market private equity groups in the United States. And we have a scorecard on every single one of them. We know that if this private equity group comes to the table to show a high valuation at the indication of interest stage, they are going to retrade or value the company down, you know, when we start to get into more of the diligence phase, and we could exclude them, you know, for example. So that just kind of goes to show you want a firm that has, you know, really good knowledge of the buyer universe and who to include and who to exclude. You also want to make sure that you're getting senior attention on these deals, that there are managing directors who are that are partners at Lincoln International who are heavily involved in the process. And it's not just, you know, being run by kind of the junior staff, but it's getting that senior level attention. And those are probably the, you know, the primary things that I would tell clients of yours to look for. Make sure they have experience, make sure it's getting that senior level attention, and they are someone who is focused on that industry or sector, because intimate knowledge of that space is really going to be important for the process.
I appreciate that. And that's really refreshing to hear you go through that process of identifying the key considerations for owners to think about And just getting back to what we talked about earlier in the podcast, that UBS has developed a boutique network of investment bankers, and it's a very small list. It's an exclusive list, and we do a really good job of exerting due diligence to make sure the only quality companies are on that list. And I'm happy to say that you guys have been a very great partner in that partnership with us on our boutique network list as well. And for that reason, we maintain a good relationship and we're happy and comfortable referring clients to you for consideration. We're going to wrap up here in just a second, John. But before I do, I just want to ask one last question. Is there any departing thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners before we wrap up this afternoon?
Yeah, I would just say that if there are business owners out there who have questions, you know, a sale process or a capital raise or whatever, doesn't have to be imminent, but I would encourage them to reach out to your team, Steve, and just use you as a resource and say, look, I'm thinking about this, you know, maybe it's not right now, but not sure that, you know, the kids, for example, are going to take over the business. Most of my wealth is tied up in this business. I need to start getting a plan. And I think if they can just start discussing what a plan looks like with you, then everything else will fall into place. And that's where, you know, we have a great relationship with your team as well. And we know that at the right time, you know, you will say, well, let's bring in a couple of investment banks to start talking about, you know, what a process might look like, or get some comps as far as, you know, what businesses like yours are being valued at right now. You know, just kind of take a pulse on the market to help them make decisions. So we're always standing by, ready to be a resource to your clients. But I would encourage them to, you know, as a first step, reach out to you and just begin the discussion. It's never too early to start thinking about these things and what it means for, you know, your long-term financial future.
That's great information, John, and I appreciate that. And we could certainly talk for hours on this topic, and there's just so much here to cover. And I hope that our listeners have gotten really good value listening today as well, and certainly can go back and rewind and listen again at a later date. But we do want to go ahead and wrap up today. And again, I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join me on this podcast today. I want to also thank all of our listeners who tuned in to listen to this podcast as well. And to you, I would say, remember, our team is here to help you. So the main focus, we help our business owners to create and manage and grow their wealth throughout the entire life cycle of their business, whether it's on the front end in the startup phase, during the operational phase and the growing phase, or on the back end where it's time to think about the exit strategy and how that's going to play out and how that's going to interact with your plans for retirement. So if you have any questions about any of the topics we've talked about today, or anything along the lines of those areas I just mentioned, or if you have questions for John, feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me by email at stephen.young@ubs.com, or you can reach me by phone at 317-816-1830, and we'll get your questions answered. Thanks again, John. Really appreciate you having you on the show today. And
no problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And again, thank everybody for joining us. And with that, I wish everybody a good day.